Hello, welcome to this episode 54 of Brashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello.
I did something I almost never do literally just a minute ago.
All right, okay.
It's nothing weird. I won a game of Street Fighter 4 online.
Oh, right, wow.
And it was a pretty awesome feeling, actually, because I don't usually, as you know, I don't play kind of online a huge amount, and I certainly don't play fighting games online because they are horrendously terrifying. Because, you know, you just get your ass handed to you most of the time.
Yeah, no one wants to face the reality. Like, it's fine when it's amongst your group of friends and it's like, yeah, I am definitely the best Street Fighter player in the world.
Yeah,
you don't want to face the reality that that might not be the case.
Yeah, well, that's basically after your stag. Part of, just to put into context, part of Ross's stag was like, we had a video games day around his flat, which was just fucking awesome. We had all the consoles set up, and it was like a tournament set up for like FIFA and Street Fighter and
Guitar
Halo.
Guitar Hero, Halo, yeah, it was good fun.
A fantastic selection. And there was a Street Fighter tournament, and I won. And basically, I was like, all right, that's it. I'm quitting now as the greatest Street Fighter player of all time. That is literally, that was what I told myself. I was like, all right, I'm clearly the best Street Fighter player of all time. Mm-hmm. I can just quit now on top. But I decided, you know, after our chat last week about Street Fighter 5, I was like, all right, I'm going to bang Street Fighter 4 Ultra in and just have a quick go on like arcade. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize I had it set up so you can accept challenges online.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It pulls you out of your game, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah, totally. It's like, you know, like the arcades. And I was like, all right, don't be a little bitch, you know, because I was basically waiting to do this podcast. I was like, all right, I'm going to fight this dude online. And I was like Sagat and he was Fei Long. And he had a pretty good record, and I was like, I'm going to get smashed. And I beat him, and I'm not going to lie, I was over the fucking moon. Like, audibly over the moon. Like, whooping and hollering almost. And I was just like, God, this is good. But again, I'm seeing this as a reason to retire. Again, I beat someone online. They had a pretty good record. When I tell this story back to my friends, they had the greatest record in the world, and I absolutely destroyed him. It was actually quite a close fight. Yeah. But
I'm pretty sure he was a pro, guys. I mean, he didn't see it. But I'm pretty sure he was.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was one of the top five.
Yeah, but, I mean, I don't know if they've done any balancing, but I remember Sagat used to be a very strong character. You'd come up against him a lot online.
Well, he used to be completely overpowered for Street Fighter 4 at the start.
Yeah, that's what I remember. You got shit if you took Sagat into an online game.
Yeah. And the thing is, I never play a Sagat. It was just like, I put it on and I was saying, God, I've never tried all these characters. And I forget that it's a basic story, but there's a story for each of them. And I always like Sagat. So I was like, I'll have a quick go with Sagat. And I know he's been nerfed with subsequent iterations of the game. And I was playing as the Ultra setting. So he wasn't the super awesome and original Street Fighter 4 Sagat.
They just put some knee pads on him so he doesn't... That knee to the face doesn't hurt as much.
Exactly. And to be honest, like, I wasn't thinking about that because, of course, I wasn't planning on playing online.
Yeah.
But ended up playing online. It was quite good, actually. Like, I was Sagat and he was Fei Long. It was just like, oh, none of us were Ryu or Ken. I was like, that's quite a nice change of pace. Mm-hmm. But God, it just reminded me of how intense playing online can be and how fun it potentially can be. But of course, if I had lost that game, we'd be having a very different conversation. I'm like, Street Fighter can go fuck itself and never play it online again. But yeah, I just wanted to open with that just because that literally just happened.
I remember matchmaking used to be awful for Street Fighter. And I wonder if it's an indictment of Street Fighter 5 that you can actually get an online game with Street Fighter 4 at the moment.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, the thing is, I can imagine that the matchmaking is all but irrelevant for me because I literally looked at my stats and it was just 0-0. Like, okay, I haven't done anything. So this, you know, anyone I fight is going to have a better record than me. And I'm assuming most people playing Street Fighter 4 online at the moment are probably pretty tasty. I mean, you would think the people who've kind of put in a decent shift, you know. I assume it hasn't got a large casual fan base left, Street Fighter 4 Ultra.
Yeah, probably not online anyway.
But it did remind me how much, like, I'm going to buy Street Fighter 5 this week. Because even though I'm not hardcore into it, I just like owning Street Fighter games. They're just cool. But speaking of new games, that was a terrible segue, but I'm going to stick with it. Just to talk about what's happened this week. I mean, I guess the big video game news at the moment is, it depends if you care, I suppose, was the announcement of Pokemon Moon and Sun, I believe it was, for the 3DS.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, it's like the 20th anniversary. And I was just wondering, with that in mind,
was it actually announced or was it leaked?
It was leaked the day before the Nintendo Direct, but obviously, with it being a Nintendo Direct and the 20th anniversary, it was always going to be that. You know, I actually watched the video, as so many of them are. It was incredibly charming. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of quite awkward, but they seem to pull that off, Nintendo and the Directs. They're quite awkward, they're quite stilted, but they're always quite charming, and they seem to get away with it.
Who presented it? Was it Reggie?
No. It was the head of the new Pokemon CEO. Franchise.
Oh, right. Oh, okay.
No, of Pokemon. Okay. I can't remember his name. It was a Japanese gentleman.
That's right, because Nintendo don't actually own Pokemon, do they? Pokemon are their own company.
Yeah. It's his own company. It's developed by Game Freak, which is, not Nintendo as well. I mean, I know they're involved in the development and stuff like that. But it is bizarre, because when you think of Pokemon, you do think of Nintendo, don't you?
Absolutely.
But it was just one of those weird things, because, you know, it was like a statement that it's like... Pokemon has sold more as a franchise than Grand Theft Auto. It's sold more than Call of Duty. I'm sure that's due to just numbers, but it's a huge, huge franchise. Especially, you know, I went to Japan last year, and it reminded me just how massive it is over there. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those weird series, because I've owned probably 4 or 5 Pokemon games down the years.
Okay.
But I've never really played one properly. I've never got into one. Every time I buy one, because I'm convinced, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll like this. Mm-hmm. And then I play it for a while, and then I never come back to it. It's like, I just noticed, I forgot I had it. I was like, I've got Pokemon Green Leaf on the Game Boy Advance. Mm-hmm. I had, you know, Pokemon Yellow back in the day. I very recently had Pokemon X for the 3DS.
All right, yeah. And I remember, I think that was the last one we spoke about on this.
Yeah. And it is a good game, and it looks pretty, and the production values are incredibly high, and I get why people like it, and I almost think, like, I should love this, and I don't know what, like, I enjoy it while I play it, but I never feel compelled to go back to it. And I was just like, well, there's every chance I might well buy Pokemon, Moon or Sun, but there's more of a chance that I'll buy it and just never really play it, which is just quite strange. I have this very odd relationship, and I'm, you know... I was just wondering, do you actually care about Pokemon games? I mean, do they have any impact on you whatsoever?
So, not really. I was slightly... I know this sounds silly because you're older than I am and you have played them, but...
Easy. No, to bring... Listen, I'm about to turn 34. I'm being very sensitive at the moment, okay? To bring up ages. Jesus Christ. I get it. I'm old.
Yeah, fuck. Good. I'm glad we've got that out of the way.
Yeah.
So...
That was almost a meltdown, wasn't it? I do apologise.
Yeah, the listeners don't know that we actually had to edit 40 minutes out of the podcast there.
Yeah. We've actually been talking now for the past, like, 2.5 hours, but it was, like, 2 hours, you know, 25 minutes of it was just me bawling my eyes out about turning 34. So, you really didn't want to hear that. So, yeah, let's get back to Pokemon.
But, yeah, like, my younger brother, Murray, who we've had on the podcast before, he loved Pokemon.
Back, by the way. I'm starting it up now. Hashtag bring back Murray. You know? So, Murray, if you're listening, get your shit together.
I'm sure he'll appreciate that.
Yeah. We'll do a Pokemon special for him. So.
But back in 2000, we went on a big family holiday to Australia. Mm-hmm. And for the flights and stuff, Murray got... it was the new Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
And when we were over in Australia, that's when he was able to pick up a copy of Yellow before it had come... It had come west.
Yeah.
So
because it came out like 2 years, certainly in Japan, I think it was 3 years before I came out over here.
Yeah, quite a considerable jump.
Yeah.
And then I remember the music distinctly, and I remember looking over his shoulder and being like, well, the combat system looks a little bit Final Fantasy-ish, but
yeah.
I'm not a big fan of the art style, and like, as much as it's a cool concept, which is essentially virtual dogfighting,
yeah, I suppose it is.
It just never, it
just
never,
less kind of creepy, I suppose.
Yeah, it was just never a franchise that really appealed to me. And then when I saw the cartoon was twofold. Not only did it put me off ever playing a Pokemon game,
so not a fan then.
No,
fan. Yeah.
It also stopped me, like.
Watching TV. I fucking hate that TV show, goddammit.
I have only ever watched one anime that I have enjoyed, and that was Spirited Away.
That's the only anime you've ever enjoyed? Well, manga?
I haven't watched that much Ghibli stuff, and that's kind of sacrilege, but...
Well, yeah, I mean, how can you stop... if you enjoy Spirited Away, I mean, don't get me wrong, Spirited Away is my favourite Studio Ghibli film and one of my top 10 movies of all time. But I was like, I just don't know how you stopped it. I don't know how you watch Spirited Away and not like, maybe I'll watch a few more of their films.
It's,
outrageous back.
I think it's some kind of conditioning, like,
and we can blame this on Pokemon.
We can blame. We can almost completely blame it on Pikachu as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I was going to say the only right. I've decided that I'm not really into Pokemon, but I love Pikachu. Like, I don't know how I managed it, but I've got 3 Pikachus in my house. I don't know how the fuck did that happen? But yeah, I really like Pikachu, but I don't really care about Pokemon. But obviously, you feel completely different.
Yeah,
on the subject.
I think it was just I was conditioned early to hate just the noise. Just why does it have to talk like that? That's so annoying.
Never really talks.
And then it's really indicative of a lot of how, like, I have a lot of issues with anime. A lot of it is how they deal with women. But, you know, that's a wider cultural Japanese issue, which we've discussed on the show.
Oh, yeah, that's a conversation for another week.
It's like, haha, like, we like young girls, and creepy old guys like young girls, and that's funny.
I'm not going to get into this, because there is a... because, you know, I think we mentioned it last week.
We were talking about Dead or Alive.
And Dead or Alive, where, you know, I often find it so ridiculous that I don't find it offensive. But there is a line, and Japan often cross it when it comes to
underage girls.
Very young-looking girls. Yeah. Kind of, but again, conversation for another week. But I can understand where you're coming from completely.
Yeah. So just, like, there's a range of factors that all really start with Pokemon, which is why...
it all comes back to Pokemon.
It does, and it's why I don't like a lot of... What do you call it? Otaku culture?
When you're
a Westerner that likes... Or I don't know if... Is weeaboo a derogatory term? I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, it is weird because, I mean, to an extent, you're kind of describing me.
Yeah, I know.
No, because, like, I don't find offense because, you know, like, I like Japanese culture and I like Japanese geek culture, but I'm not an obsessive
and
about
you're
it.
Self-aware. Like,
oh, yeah, I'm very self-aware. And to be honest, as much as I like a lot of anime and manga, I don't watch a great deal of it.
Okay.
Like I will sit there and I'll argue until I'm blue in the face that you should go back and watch, you know, a number of Studio Ghibli films. Mm-hmm. And that you should go and watch Akira and Ghost in the Shell and all the classics.
I tried Akira. I don't know what it was. I just didn't enjoy it.
You didn't enjoy Akira.
I know.
That's another film that strolls into my top 10 of all time.
I like Spirited Away, but that's... Essentially, it's because it's Japanese Disney, basically.
Akira is more traditionally Japanese than like Studio Ghibli is. Or, like, don't get me wrong, it's incredibly Japanese in its own way, but it's its own thing. It doesn't quite fall in line with what I would consider to be traditional Japanese anime and manga.
Right. Okay.
It doesn't have the same.
It kind of stands on its own.
In the same way as you said, in the same way that maybe Disney does over here, arguably.
Okay.
It's kind of like its own thing. But I'm surprised that if Akira's not floating your boat, then
I've got Ghost in the Shell sat in my to watch list on Netflix, but I never find myself in the mood to sit and watch anime.
Yeah, Ghost in the Shell is really good. I don't think it's in the same league as Akira personally.
Okay,
I mean, maybe if you try with the manga rather than the anime. Try, you know, because you quite like comic books and
I do.
You know, without the voices and stuff. I mean, I've got the full.
You could be right. The voices are a massive. Like, obviously, dubbing. Like, I would rather do subtitles than dubbing. But I don't know. Like, I know it's fine in movies, but I don't know what it would be like for anime, where it's all about watching the artwork.
Again, it completely depends, because the dubbing, all, you know, whether it be the original or the dub, if you get those horrendous kind of Japanese manga tropes where little girls with their squeaky voices, and it just, like, it can kind of grind. But, like, stuff like, again, to come back to Akira just as a kind of core example, I mean, that the voice cast is very good. I've watched it subtitled and I've watched it dubbed. I've watched it both, you know, it was dubbed and then redubbed for the re-release, I think,
right,
like 10 years ago. And both dubs are actually really good. But, I mean, again, I would argue the corner for something like Akira. And, again, you know, next time I'm around your place, I come around to your house, I'm definitely going to bring the, at least volume one of the Akira manga. Uh-huh. But I totally understand why people wouldn't watch the TV shows, for instance, because I can't get into them. As much as I like watching, anime movies... The TV shows are just too much. I mean, procrastination. I mean, that's the first word I think of when I think of these shows. They just drag on forever and ever.
Right, okay.
I like the concept of them. Something like Naruto. I like the idea of it, and I actually started watching it. and I watched like 10 episodes and I was like, nothing's fucking happened. All they've done is stare at each other and look exasperated. But that's all they fucking do.
Would you classify Dragon Ball Z as anime as well?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's the same.
That's the other one. Murray loved Dragon Ball Z. Yeah, maybe even still does.
And I got into it when I was younger.
Really
for
annoyed
a little
me.
While. Oh, no, I totally get it. I tried to go back to it because, again, I like the concept. I like the art style. I like the characters. Mm-hmm. But then I go back and watch it, and not only do I realize that there have been 500-odd episodes, but again, a fight scene lasts over, like, 4 episodes. And again, for the most part, it's them just looking at each other, looking slightly sweaty.
Yeah.
It's quite strange. But yeah, that's fair enough. I totally get it why Pokemon's not your thing. And as I said, Pokemon... I feel like I want it to be more my thing than it actually is, which is quite strange. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the other big thing that came from that, and it was actually more because, you know, the leak came out the day before to say that, you know, Moon and Sun were going to be announced.
Yeah.
But on top of that, there was the suggestion that the NX is definitely coming out this year. And I know you're not a big Nintendo guy.
It's not, well... It's,
you're, not
it's,
a you're not a, a Nintendo guy in the same way that I am,
no,
for instance.
No.
Like, I'm going to buy... They could release anything, and I'm just going to buy it because it's Nintendo.
Yeah.
You don't have that same approach.
Well, we spoke about your approach to expendable income, and you know, you are the very epitome of a day one adopter. So
I am nowadays.
Like,
sadly,
I would totally own a Wii U if I could justify it to myself.
I would call myself more of a weak one adopter, where I kind of have an internal struggle for a few days.
But
and
you
then
know
I have
you're going to crumble.
Yeah, and then I eventually crumble and get it anyway. I don't have that commitment. Like, I don't just kind of, like, as soon as it's out, I pre-order it and I'm ready on
and
day
you're
one.
In the queue.
I'll come and, you know, I'll and ah about it for at least 4 days and then just completely fall.
Well, I mean, nowadays you have the luxury of knowing, like, they're not going to sell out. They know exactly how many they're... I mean, to be fair, Nintendo are very good at the whole artificial shortage.
Absolutely.
Like, to keep people buying.
Maybe that's what works on me, because I'm not traditionally a day one adopter. Like, I did have the Xbox One, I think, ready for day one, but then I bizarrely didn't open it for like 3 months.
Yeah, it was your Christmas present, wasn't
it? Yeah, waiting for Christmas, yeah. But if any console I buy on day one, it is Nintendo consoles. And I think it is maybe they've got, you know, they've won me over with that kind of approach where I'm like, oh, if I don't get it, it might sell out. Like, they've won. They've beat me, essentially.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, there's every chance that I'm just going to buy the next Nintendo console. And on top of that, there is the fact that the Nintendo consoles are often a little bit cheaper. Like, I know the Wii U wasn't cheap.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, what, 300 rather than, like, 450. And... you know, it's just that little bit more. I'm like, oh, maybe I can justify it. But, I mean, I'm going to get it no matter what. But the one thing I'm more interested in anything is, you know, the idea that, you know, it's been long suspected that it's going to be a console / handheld.
Yeah.
Like, would that be a selling point to you? Because I really, like, it's not something that I'm particularly interested in, to be honest.
It depends on what kind of concessions they have to make to make it that. To be honest... And I know this is something that's unlikely to happen because Nintendo are very bad at harnessing their old franchises or old games, and their store is a testament to that. But if there was something that would allow me to basically play a massive Nintendo back catalogue...
Like Netflix, but Nintendo-flix.
Well, not even streaming. I'd be... Well, yeah, like, not streaming, but if they'd just allow me to buy old games... Like, I'd be willing to pay a little bit more, because I know that Nintendo don't like to price down their games.
I think I would be more interested, actually, in a huge, like, Netflix-style streaming service, because, well, and don't get me wrong, with the option,
like,
to buy...
Well, EA are doing this at the moment.
Yeah, and I think they're doing it to great effect. I mean, I think the EA Access service is one of the greatest deals around. Like, you know, I pay £20 a year, and I've got so many great games that, you know, I don't... Because, like I said, I'm not kind of, especially with the American sports games, Madden, NHL and stuff, I don't feel like I have to have them on day one.
Yeah.
So I just wait, and then 7 months later, I've just got Madden 16. Mm-hmm. And I got Dragon Age and Battlefield Hardline, which is the kind of spin-off I wouldn't buy. It's like the new UFC game. I'm not going to buy the UFC game, like the last one. I'm just going to wait it out. And I know, like, 6-7 months, it'll show up on EA Access. But I would love... But it would have to be all encompassing. The point is, I would like a Nintendo service where I pay so much a month, but it's literally the Nintendo back catalog, and I can play what I want. I want to be able to just like kind of dip a toe into those weird, obscure Japanese Nintendo games. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think this is happening, but that's the kind of service I would absolutely go for.
I mean, that requires a solid internet-based infrastructure that Nintendo... I mean, they have the capacity to do it, but I don't think they ever will, because they're trying to appeal to children or to families.
They've been a lot better. They've been so much better. Like, you know,
they have.
Mario Kart, Smash Brothers.
They have.
Like, don't get me wrong, they're still playing catch-up.
And they're starting to harness what they can do with DLC.
Yeah.
But it took them a whole generation to catch up to what their competitors were doing. And fair enough, that like the one thing you can always say for them is that they do their own thing. And it almost always progresses what video games can do. To be honest, that's the one thing that I would say the Wii U has been a failure for. Like, nothing really uses that gamepad. And while there's a few, games, you know, what was it, Zombie U, that allowed you to interface
with
that.
It was very
that.
Launch heavy. Same with Nintendo Land. Like, Nintendo Land used it, but again, it wasn't a like, I enjoyed Nintendo Land, but it wasn't a system seller in the same way. Obviously, it wasn't in the same way that, like, Wii Sports was.
Yeah.
And, yeah, since then, I mean, I just don't use it. I used it occasionally for Wind Waker, but again, you know, it was quite nice to have it for the menu, but other than occasionally using it as a second screen, in so much that, you know, if Bethan's watching something, I can play. Like, that's quite nice. Mm-hmm. Like, it is a... technologically speaking, it's actually very impressive, because it's not done via Blu-ray. It's in-house technology, and it works perfectly. Mm-hmm. You know, you just turn it off, and it just works on the screen. It is like having a home console on the screen. So maybe that's what they go... You know, maybe it's an kind of... an improvement on that pre-existing technology that's going to allow them to essentially harness the power of the console to ensure that while it is a handheld, it's going to have the power of a, or the visual fidelity of a high-powered console.
Yeah.
And I think that's what needs to be the case. To be honest, I would completely forego any kind of gimmick, and I speak for a lot of older Nintendo fans, just for a cutting-edge Nintendo console.
And a good controller. I would be happy with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, if they just released... I mean, the thing is, would it sell? Probably not. Personally, I would happily take the GameCube too.
The Wavebird.
Just a good controller, just cutting-edge graphics, and fantastic-looking first-party games.
Yeah.
That's easy for me to say, because I already own the Xbox One and the PS4, and essentially I'm quite happy just to buy it as a Nintendo box. Mm-hmm. But in terms of selling it at, you know, kind of hitting anywhere near the same success as, like, the Wii or, you know, the DS or anything like that, or even the N64... Mm-hmm. They're going to have to do something a bit different, especially, you know, historically speaking, consoles that come in mid-season, so to speak, they don't do well.
Well, the Wii U, the Wii U is a prime example. I don't think people were ready.
Exactly.
people weren't ready to make the next generational jump, and the pricing of the Wii U. Well, yeah, of course.
It was essentially the same console as what was already out in terms of power. And, you know, the one selling point, obviously beyond the first party stuff, was like, oh, look, it's got a tablet. But that kind of ship had already sailed.
Yep.
And it just wasn't the selling point. Obviously, they didn't have a clear enough idea for it. They were like, okay, we can do this. We can do the tablet. But they didn't have that clear vision. It was like, well, why is this going to make gaming better? Why is this going to make the Wii U sell? Because if you're making a console with essentially the same... I mean, it's slightly more powerful, but it's essentially the same capabilities as the 360 and the PS3, which were already very well established.
Yeah, and significantly cheaper. And rumors were already swirling about their replacements.
Well, it was just a terrible plan for... Like, don't get me wrong, there's a lot to like about the Wii U. I mean, the first-party stuff, there are a lot of very good games.
That's always the case, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, you wouldn't expect anything less from Nintendo. But right from the off, and, you know, this isn't in hindsight, this is what I was saying at the time, when they were trying to sell it as a third-party console, and they were releasing games like, oh, look, you can play Mass Effect, you can play Call of Duty, I was like, what is the point of this? Because
it's 3 years old.
Was that Xbox One and PS4 are going to be out in like a year or so. All development is going to move to these more powerful consoles, and the Wii U's just not going to be able to keep up. So already it was completely out of touch.
It was bizarre. Like, and to be honest, Nintendo, like, I worry that if they continue on the path they're on, they're going to have to rely on the gimmick of that console. You know, for example, the Wii, it was the motion controls. For the Wii U, it was the tablet. For the DS, it's the dual screen touchscreen thing, which, you know, has worked out really well for them. But Nintendo should be relying on making games that you can only get on Nintendo. And to be fair, they
that's
do.
Not enough now, though, is it?
But there's also rumors swirling that the Wii U could be the first Nintendo console not to have a Zelda game on it. Not to have a new Zelda game on it.
Yeah, they've actually got two. And the thing is, it will have, I think, Zelda NX, whatever it's called. Zelda Wii U.
Uh-huh.
Will be on the Wii U, but it'll also be NX.
Are you thinking it's going to be like Twilight Princess?
I mean, Jesus Christ, I think it was like last E3, like immediately after E3. I took a lot of shit for it as well. I was just like, you know, I wrote an article immediately, just like stating as a fact. People took it like I had proof, but I was just like, listen, Zelda is not coming as a Wii U exclusive.
No.
Like, they didn't announce it last year. I was like, you can just fucking forget that. Like, that's not happening. Right, best case scenario for Wii U owners, it's a cross-platform, like
Twilight Princess.
Twilight Princess. But there's no way that is not coming to NX, because they look at it now, they're like, all right, we need to make a big... Right, if you look back at all the successful Nintendo consoles,
mm-hmm.
one thing they often have in common is that really good... not even a launch lineup, but at least a launch game. Like, people forget about the fact that the Wii didn't, not only did it have Wii Sports, it also had, you know, as you mentioned, Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was on GameCube, but nobody, the vast majority of people didn't see it as a GameCube game. They just saw it as a new Zelda game on Wii, and that's where everybody wanted to play it.
I mean, I don't think there's a stronger way to, like, me personally, because I'm a big, of all the Nintendo franchises, Zelda is probably the one that resonates with me most, although I love Mario Kart, but it's not really like it's just a fun game. It's not really like a, I know this sound, I don't know quite how to explain myself, but
I don't think it, like, I love Mario Kart the same as you, but it doesn't elicit the same passion mm-hmm. that Zelda does.
It doesn't feel like its own thing.
No, I totally get, like, I've got, I mean, you've seen it in my flat, like, it's quite an arty one, but I've got like a framed Zelda picture in our living room. I would never have a framed Mario Kart picture.
Yeah,
it's just, there's something about, I think, Zelda which kind of, you know, attaches itself to people.
I think it's because of my, like, I focus quite a lot on the story in games.
Me too.
Like, Mario Kart 8 is, in my opinion, almost unassailable in how good it is, how enjoyable an experience it is. But It's not a franchise that's immediately mm-hmm. going to make me want to go out and buy a console.
No, I mean, Mario Kart alone might actually do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I see it more as a game. It's strange that you use the word experience, because it works both ways. But I would see kind of like Zelda as an experience, whereas I'd see Mario Kart very much as a game.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic game that I play with my friends. But when I look back, the stuff that really sticks with me... like, when I think of Zelda, I think of the experience I had with the game.
Yes.
When I think of something like Mario Kart, I think of the fun I had with my friends.
Yes, exactly. You can't immerse yourself into the world of Mario Kart.
Yeah, exactly. You know. Exactly. I mean, don't get me wrong, I gave it a good go in the GameCube days, but again, that was more to do with...
All about the blue sparks.
Yeah. But that was more in kind of giving myself up to, you know, being a pothead for a year in university. And quite enjoying that. But yeah... As I said, I mean, I'm looking forward to it, just because it's a Nintendo console. It'll be very interesting to see the response people have to it. I mean, I think a massive deal will be early doors, whether EA are supporting it with sports titles, whether they have faith in the console. Because obviously, you know, dev kits must be out there by now. They must be in people's hands. And I think something like that, you know, whether EA early doors say, oh no, you know, we think this is going to be big, we want to support it with FIFA, with Madden, that'll give you an idea of where the industry, you know, the industry's view on the console is.
That's true.
But, I mean, to go back to the handheld thing, it's just that I can't imagine being a selling point for me, because as much as, like, I own a Vita, I own a 3DS, I've just never been a handheld gamer, to be honest. It's like, I've always owned them, you know, as we were talking previously about the Pokemons, but they're something I often buy like 2 years after they're released.
Yeah,
like, you know, when they're a bit cheaper, and again,
and there's the library.
Yeah, I never have that kind of urge in the same way. It's almost like I'm out, or I see one, like, you know, it's a good deal, and it's a bit of a kind of impulse buy.
Yeah.
Whereas a console is never an impulse. I make jokes about it, but I'm getting the next console. You know, it's only a matter of time. It's in my head. Whereas you know, a new Nintendo handheld comes out, or a Vita comes out, Vita 2, whatever you want to say, it's like, I wouldn't even think about buying it at launch. It's just not going to happen. It's one of those things I'm like, I'll probably buy it one day just because they'll be...
Well, I mean, when it comes to Nintendo, you generally know what you're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, especially, like, look at the DS, for example, which, you know, to be fair, that evolution. I would say Game Boy stopped at Game Boy Advance. You know, that's its own evolution. And then the DS was its own thing. And I've owned the original, the kind of Ziggurat DS, the original horrible grey one.
Oh, that was ugly. And then, that is one of the ugliest consoles of all fucking time. Yeah. Can't believe you bought that.
Yeah. And I was working at Game Station in Perth at the time.
Yeah.
And then I remember I traded that in for a PSP and then went on to a DS Lite, I think, which was actually a really nice console.
That's got
to
be the biggest aesthetic improvement in video game history. from the DS, which is one of the ugliest consoles of all time, to the DS Lite, which was easily one of the prettiest consoles of all time.
Nice clamshell. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just clean lines. It was just a lovely looking machine.
And a nice bright red. It was nice.
Oh, God, but that original one, fuck me, that was ugly shit.
But yeah, I have owned every iteration of the DS. I never bothered with 3DS because, to be honest, that price is still fairly high.
It's very odd that you say that because, bizarrely, for all my, you know, owning a Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Game Boy Advance, Game Boy Micro, I've still got, I love my Game Boy Micro, I never owned a DS, which seems bizarre.
Wow.
But I own a 3DS, and that's allowing me to go back and play many of the DS games I missed.
Yeah.
You actually gave me a handful, which I quite enjoyed. But it's just strange that I think that's kind of testament to my lack of interest in handhelds. Like, the DS was, well, the most popular handheld of all time.
Yeah, I mean, it did really
It never grabbed me. It just never grabbed me. I mean, it sounds like you're much the same as me, whereas you take like an interest in handheld gaming, but I assume the NX having, say it does have, you know, say it runs like, you know, like a high definition console, it looks fantastic, and you can take it on the go and it still looks great. I mean, would that be a selling point to you?
Yeah, it would.
It would be, would
it? Yeah, it would. I think it's just as I get a bit older and start to realize that I have, like, even without a kid, I have responsibilities. Like, I need to be, like, I'm doing a job I love, and I'm working in an industry I love, and I need to start actually working on projects in my own time instead of just kind of doing work, coming home and playing games.
It's a classic thing as you get older. You just don't have the time to spare. And, you know, especially as you mentioned before, that you actually travel quite a bit.
Yeah.
I guess if you did have a handheld and, you know, one you really thought, okay, this is the console experience in my hand, then maybe I'd go for it. Although that's what the Vita was supposed to be. And again, that they say it's the console experience, but it look, don't get me wrong, a lot of those games look fantastic, but then you try and play them, even with the little thumbsticks, and it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
And the reason Nintendo handhelds have always done so well, largely, is because they deliver handheld experiences.
Yes, like that's the major focus, and that's the thing that Nintendo have, like, even not just their handhelds, with their consoles, they start with the hardware and they build around what they have. That's why the hardware is what it is. And fair enough, like, not every DS game makes fantastic use of the touchscreen. I mean, there's games where you have to blow on a microphone in the middle because they put a microphone in, so they might as well make it a mechanic. You know, stuff that. But when you try to take a console game and put it onto a handheld, you really need to know what you're doing because, like, make it look good. Like, apparently the Uncharted game on Vita was okay. Like, it looked good.
It's fine.
But you could tell it was, like, Diet Uncharted, you know?
Yeah, it's weird because it's almost hard to explain it. Again, it's one of these things Nintendo are very good at. If you take Uncharted as a perfect example, where it is, okay, it's a slightly diet version of Uncharted, but it looks like Uncharted, it plays like Uncharted.
Yeah.
But the whole time I was playing it, it was just like, I prefer to just be playing Uncharted. Whereas if you take Mario 3D Land, you could argue that that was Mario Lite.
Yeah.
But at no point when I was playing it was I was like, oh, I wish I was playing a full console version of Mario. It was like, I loved playing Mario 3D Land, uh-huh. and then I loved playing Mario 3D World. They just seem to connect the gameplay to the format so much better, whereas everything just feels like a kind of downgrade almost yeah. for like the Vita. Like, you know, you play Killzone, it's like, yeah, it works, but it's like a, well, it feels like a budget version of Killzone.
Yeah, there's something to be said for a big screen experience. And
again, I think that is experience on the part of Nintendo.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when you're playing, say, Mario or Mario Kart, they don't re-release Mario Kart 7 or Mario Kart 8 on the 3DS with slightly budget graphics. No, they release their own specific
yeah.
Mario version. Mario 7 was on the mm-hmm. 3DS, I do apologize. But you know what I mean? They don't release the Wii version or the Wii U version scaled down.
You have to tweak your mechanics and make sure that it feels right. Like that's what mm-hmm. I think that's what is missing, pardon me, for most handheld console games, is the feeling that you get mm-hmm. on a console game. Like if you try to port things, something as simple as, like, say with Mario, you have a wide screen to play it on a console, and mm-hmm. as your platform, I'm talking about a 2D platform in Mario, as you go yeah. along, you can see a certain distance in front of you, and mm-hmm. so you can calculate the amount of speed you need to make a jump, for example,
or
you know, you can plan ahead, especially on the trickier levels where you need to mm-hmm. do that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're looking at a tiny screen with that, yeah, you can make it widescreen, yeah. but then you have to shrink everything down, you lose mm-hmm. fidelity, it doesn't look as good, and the scale feels wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nintendo were just really good at balancing the mechanics for stuff like that.
When they make the next Mario game, they know they're making it based on that smaller screen, mm-hmm. and subsequently each jump, each movement they expect you to make will be changed based around the platform yeah. again. And again, it's something Nintendo are fantastic at. But will that still work if you've got a console which is also a handheld and they're basically one and the same thing? And I'm just not sure if it'll work in the same way. It'll be interesting, and you know, if I'm always interested to see what Nintendo do. I still don't think there's anything more exciting than
an upcoming Nintendo console.
I don't think there is. Like, you vaguely have an idea what you're getting with an Xbox and new PlayStation.
Yeah.
You're getting much, don't get me wrong, there's obviously innovations, but you're getting a prettier, you know, version of what you've had before.
Yeah.
Whereas with a Nintendo, you're like, well, what the fuck are we going to get? I was like, I don't know.
You're going to get a controller that looks like a Trident for some reason. Or,
well, yeah. Like, again, you look back at it now, you know, you don't think to, imagine, remember the first time you saw that Wii remote? I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
I was like, what? How the hell does that, you know, it wasn't immediately clear. It really was. And then the name and everything, it was genuinely exciting and it was funny. It was something to talk about. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I can't wait for the Nintendo reveal, whether it be for this year or next, whatever, you know, I can wait.
Yeah.
As long as I just hope they get it right. That's all I want. You know, I really want Nintendo to do well. And I think they need to launch. I mean, I have no doubt whatsoever that the NX will be launching with Zelda.
Yeah.
But they're going to need more. You know, Zelda's a massive title at the start, but again, they're going to need that item which says, this is why you need that console. And that's what the great consoles have always
yeah.
had, whether it be Super Mario Brothers, Mario World, Mario 64, Wii Sports, whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, in fairness, the handhelds haven't always had that. In fact, some of the handhelds have got off to pretty, you know, the DS got off to a pretty rough start, actually.
Yeah.
But the thing that ultimately sold it wasn't the console eventually, it was brain training. And it was Nintendogs. It was almost like they had a second launch and went, oh, well, look, this is why you need this console.
Yeah.
And that's what sold it. And the thing is with the Wii U could have got, even if it didn't have it at launch, say, like 4 or 5 months later, and that was basically what we were all waiting on. I was like, no, there's going to be that game. That game's going to say, oh, this is why you need the second screen. And then everyone else kind of falls in line and says, oh, well, that's what you can do with it. it never came. But I think on this occasion, they need something big straight out the game.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
But I could talk about Nintendo all day, but I'm not going to. Instead, I was actually going to talk about a book I've been reading recently.
Okay.
Have you read Ready Player One by Ernest Cline?
I have indeed.
You have indeed. Well, I read that book. I enjoyed it, but I had reservations.
Okay.
I'm now reading his second book, Armada?
Yeah, it's his second book.
Yeah. And again, The thing is, I don't. I'm not as interested in the concept. It's very much of a kind of Last Starfighter deal. Mm-hmm. You know, video gamer gets to fight aliens and all that jazz. And it really does bring to the fore. While again, as the book kind of progresses, I've kind of got more and more into the story. But I really do feel like the dialogue, the characterization, and in particular, a lot of the quotes are so fucking heavy-handed in those books. Like, you know, it's understandable that you and I would be interested in the, you know, especially the first one. I think Ready Player One, with this kind of slight, you know, dystopian future, was a really strong idea for a book, a strong narrative.
Yeah. I mean,
but I remember some of the dialogue. I was just like, Jesus Christ, it kind of gets my back up almost. I thought some of it was terrible, and I'm noticing it even more in Armada. Like, it works for the longest time. I kind of like, okay, it's not the most eloquently written book in the world, but I'm on board with it. And then all of a sudden, somebody will fucking just force in a really ham-fisted like movie or video game quote. And I'm just like, yeah, okay, I get it. And then it'll smash you over the head with it and go, oh, because it's from that film.
Yeah.
Remember? I'm like,
yeah. I mean, I would say that Ready Player One had a lot of that as well. There was a lot of fan service.
Yeah.
Oh, and to be honest,
he's gone
a lot of it was aimed before my time. You know, a lot of it is like early Commodore and Atari stuff. There's not a lot of like stuff that was around when I grew up. And that's fine because, you know, I like my video game history as well. It's important to know where you've come from. So it was really cool, and it felt a little bit like an adventure story for nerds. And it was perfect.
I was all for that. And as I said, I really liked the story, and I thoroughly enjoyed Ready Player One. Thoroughly enjoyed it. As I said, despite some reservations about his writing style and his characterization, for the most part, I really enjoyed it. This, and again, with Armada, I have enjoyed it, but a lot of the references this time round, I'm much more on board with, because I had the same issue with you. I wasn't really around for the Atari kind of era. This is much more kind of 80s gaming, going on to more modern stuff. But in particular, it's very heavy with the 80s kind of movie quotes.
Yeah.
And again, all the kind of stuff I love. You know, you're talking A Million and One, like Predator, Aliens, Star Wars. God, fucking Star Wars quotes. Jesus Christ. But again, it just feels so cheesy, some of it. It really it's like, who the fuck talks like this? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm all for throwing in a kind of knowing quote amongst, you know, geeky, especially with you, like, you know, quote unquote geekier friend. But Jesus Christ, some of it, as I said, it just kind of made my I'd go as far as saying made my skin crawl. But again, I think I'm not sure which movie company picked up the rights to the to Armada. But it, you know, despite the, you know, it does mention the fact that it's similar to a lot of these kind of 80s in space, you know, child gets dragged to space to fight aliens, you know, because of video game skills, blah, blah, blah. But this one does, I think, lend itself well to the big screen again. And the same is very much true of Ready Player One, that despite my issues with the actual writing style, the story is fantastic. And obviously they're doing a Steven Spielberg is directing the movie.
Yeah.
And they've actually just cast the lead, Ty Sheridan, who I only know from Joe and Mud. And he was very good in both of those. I think he's in the new X-Men
movie
as well.
I saw a young Cyclops. Well, he's not even that young, like a young Cyclops.
But yeah, I think he's, based on what I've seen, an interesting choice. And obviously, being a Spielberg film, it's like, oh yeah, I'm ready to see this.
It'll have
now
good production values. It'll look good. It'll have a great soundtrack.
And you know,
I'm hoping
Spielberg
for like an
E.T.
kind of thing.
Like a real 80s, and again, people keep referring, like that Amblin vibe.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Spielberg's not going to be as heavy-handed with the dialogue as Ernest Cline often is. You know, that's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It'll have all the references, and I think we live in a world where you can really go heavy on the references, but you don't need to smash people in the face with it. And that's the point, which is odd that I don't... It seems Ernest Cline doesn't get that. Who's someone who's obviously a geek. It's like, we live in a world where you don't need to remind everyone, oh, that's what that quote is
I think Ready Player One couched its references a bit better than it sounds. Like, I haven't read Armada, so I can't tell.
It's a better book than Armada, and it definitely... Like, I had a slight issue with it in Ready Player One, but with this, like, right from the off, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, he's fucking going for it.
Well, Ready Player One couches it in the context of this man who... I mean, spoilers, I suppose. Well, no, because it's the basic concept. It's not really a spoiler, but you know, it's about this. It's a we should have started with this actually. It's about this young boy. He lives in a dystopian future, in basically the middle of a scrapyard. Like no one loves him. He doesn't really have. He doesn't really. He doesn't. He's got friends.
No, I know.
He's got friends. But they only exist to him online in this thing called the Oasis, which is essentially a stand-in for the internet. And you jack into it with VR, and essentially you spend all of your time and all of your life online. And, there's obviously a commentary being made there.
Oh, absolutely, especially you know, like virtual reality is going to be pushing on us whether we like it or not.
Yeah.
This film is going to be so much more kind of, you know, it's going to be perfectly timed essentially because it's due to come out this year, isn't it?
Is it this year?
I thought I saw that it was coming out this year.
Which if they just cast their lead, I would be very surprised.
I thought it was
because there's got to be a lot of CGI for that film.
Yeah. Do you know? I'm basing that purely, I think, on Google because basically, I was for this podcast or future podcast, I was basically just checking out the movies that are coming out in 2016.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Ready Player One was on that list. But what you say makes perfect sense. You know, you would think we would have seen a trailer or a teaser by now. Anyway,
I mean,
but
the fact that. You know,
like he's only been cast,
he's only just been cast, and that I mean, it's a game about virtual reality. It's going to be like, I'm not going to say it's going to be like Tron, but I'd say there's going to be a lot of Tron influence in there.
Because the stuff in the virtual reality is a lot more realistic quite often. But again, they don't have to go completely with the book. You know, the point is this is an adaptation, and again, I think the idea is that you can really, you know, cut loose with this, like visually and artistically, which is always going to be quite interesting, as you say, with the virtual reality stuff. It's going to be very interesting to see, you know, how relevant that is when it comes out. But it made me think. Actually, I mean, I'm looking forward to that simply on the basis that, you know, I quite like the book, and obviously it's Steven Goddamn Spielberg. And people are like, oh, you know, but there's never been a good video game movie before. But the fact of the matter is, Ready Player One
Super Mario Brothers with Bob Hoskins. Come on.
Oh well, that was fantastic. But there are two very clear. What's the word I'm looking for? You can separate it into essentially video game movies, which are movies based on video games, but then there are movies about video games, which aren't necessarily based on any particular game. And they're actually often a lot more successful. Like, you look at video game movies and you think, as you say, you think of Super Mario Brothers, you think of Tomb Raider, which is seen as one of the more successful ones, but it's still shit. Mortal Kombat, Street Fighter, all that stuff.
Some people really like Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, I've got a soft spot for it. I went back and watched it. It's a piece of shit. It's
it's
nostalgia.
It's just Christophe Lambert. It's like, oh come on.
It's a bad... The fact of the matter is, it has its moments. The soundtrack's cool. But as a movie, it's a piece of shit. There's just no two ways about it. You know, you can take me to court on that. But there are a lot of films based on video game, based on, you know, the video game industry, were actually really good. I mean, one of my favorite documentaries of all time is The King of Kong. That is an absolutely exceptional documentary. And I got a lot of my friends to watch. I was like, listen, guys, I know you're not into video games, but this doesn't matter. Much in the same way that Whiplash could be about anything. It's about drumming, but it could be about anything. The King of Kong, you could replace Donkey Kong with anything. But it's a fantastic. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. But I know. Oh, I know what it's all about.
Until you see it, it has got one of the great screen villains of all time, and it just so happens that he's real. It's just fucking. It's unbelievable. It's like the quote unquote good guy of the piece comes across as just the nicest, most mild-mannered guy in the world, and the villain is just the most horrendous mulleted bastard you will ever come across.
I've seen Rick and Morty where they parody him.
Yeah, oh, it's so easy. He's almost beyond parody. Oh, I would say he's almost beyond parody. But I mean, that I would put that amongst my favorite documentaries. Scott Pilgrim is as much about music as it is about
Think
videos.
We've spoken about our love for that film on this podcast before.
I love that film. I still think that might be my favorite of his films, as much as I love Shaun of the Dead, and Hot Fuzz is one of my favorite films of all time. But there's something about Scott Pilgrim. I mean, it just speaks to me. It is made for me.
That's exactly how I feel about it.
Yeah, and it's a shame it didn't do that well, to be honest, at the box office. But
it was niche, based on a niche video game.
Based on
a niche comic book.
I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't seen Scott Pilgrim, please... I mean, if you haven't seen either of those, King of Kong and Scott Pilgrim, I mean, those are both solid gold experiences. Yeah. They're just both fantastic. But the same is true. I mean, it's a bit more of a jump, but there is nothing more video gamey than Edge of Tomorrow. Edge of Tomorrow is a video game as a movie,
essentially. I still haven't seen that, but I know it's about, like, he continually respawns, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the book is much... Despite the fact that the book is, I think, a 16-year-old Japanese kid, the story remains largely unchanged.
A 16-year-old Japanese kid standing for Tom Cruise.
48-year-old Tom Cruise, yeah. But, and some people... like, I was speaking to my friend about it, and he was like, oh, but I'm not really fussed on Tom Cruise. I was like, this is such an... like, the stuff you see in the trailer, it's hero Tom Cruise stuff. Yeah. But for the majority of that film, he's a sniveling little shit. And if you don't like him, I mean, this is a film where you get to see him die over and over and over again. And again, I don't want this to turn into, like, hyperbole, but that is one of my favorite summer blockbusters of the last 5 years. Wow. Again, it's that good. And... it couldn't be more video gamey. As you said, it is essentially about you go into a battle, you get killed, you get a little bit further, you go back to start. It's essentially a roguelike.
Yeah.
And each time you just have a little bit more talent, a little bit more experience. And that's a fantastic film. And despite the fact that it's not based on a video game, structurally, it's the most video gamey movie you will ever come across.
You should give it a chiptune soundtrack.
Oh, absolutely. Speaking of that, I mean, you know, there's the more obvious stuff then. Like, Wreck-It Ralph is a fantastic... yeah. You know, it's got video game characters in it. Oh, I absolutely love that film. And I watched it not too long ago, and one of my favourite scenes is still the bit with Zangief.
Oh.
Just because you are a bad guy doesn't mean you are a
bad guy.
I just got... of all the... you know, characters to throw into that film, I was like, fancy, you know, Zangief stealing the show, but... Wreck-It Ralph's fantastic. Tron, I know it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I like the original, but I really did enjoy the sequel.
Yeah, the sequel, I know it is kind of sacrilege, but I think the second one is by far the better film.
Yeah, I prefer it too. I mean, it goes off the rails a bit in the second half, but especially in the first half, that film, when I went to see it at the cinema, was visually... and with
how
the soundtrack
it looks and
Daft
the soundtrack.
Punk.
I mean, it's Daft Punk. God. Like,
it's so good.
I mean, it's so orchestral Daft Punk. It's incredible.
I mean, I just remember, like, that's a film where I remember moments rather than the actual, like, plot, if you know what I mean. Like, I remember that, obviously, the first time he goes into the game, and in particular, the start of the bike cycle.
The light cycle.
And he's just got the stick, and they just give him a stick, but then, you know, when he jumps with the stick in front of him,
materializes.
And the kind of bike, oh, man, that was just the fucking, you know, when those, like, proper geek out moments when you just sit there with a big shit eating grin on your face. That was one of those. It's weird though, because they're not always successful, because there was The Wizard that was about video games, and that, like, I watched that film loads when I was younger, and obviously it was famous for introducing us all, well, the majority of us, to Super Mario Brothers 3, but that film was a piece of shit. But
I think as someone who aspires to be a game designer, I've watched a lot of documentaries that don't so much focus on the culture that arises around a game, but more how the game is made. So I've watched...
oh, what was the one with Stephen... John... what's his name?
Jonathan Blow. Indie Game the Movie.
That was really good.
It was good, but, I mean, there's no clear-cut... apart from Edmund McMillan, one of the guys behind Super Meat Boy.
I know where you're going.
It makes all indie game developers look... you know, everyone looks like they've got some major... behavioral issues, some significant rage problems. I mean, I would imagine
he introduced us some characters.
Yeah, I mean, Phil Fish, like, he's entertaining. He's an asshole, but he's an entertaining asshole.
He seems the most, despite the fact he's clearly a bit of a head case, he seems at least one of the more socially adept of the bunch. Like, some of the other ones, as you say, you know, you go through and, like, my God, these people have problems. And I don't think it necessarily did the video game industry any favours in terms
of reputation.
Reputation in interpreting the kind of people, you know, what people think of when they think of, like, video games.
Yeah, I mean, you already think that there's probably quite a high percentage of people in the industry who have, like, high-functioning autism. You know, especially like programmers, very intelligent people, good with numbers.
Socially inept.
I mean, I used to think I was socially inept, and then I got to meet some people in the games industry.
Well, there is still an element of that, I think. Yeah. And, you know, it does lend itself well to people who just stay indoors and, you know, stick on their computer. Yeah. I think there always will be that. But, and again, I don't think, you know, you should pull any punches. You know, the fact of the matter is, Jonathan Blow doesn't come across as somebody I would necessarily want to go for a beer with. But it was an interesting look into somebody who I think most people appreciate is something of a genius, maybe.
Yeah, and the witness bears that out. And he's committed as well. He's committed and confident in his own vision. He took everything he made from Braid and just piped it right into The Witness.
And I haven't actually played The Witness yet.
I'm looking forward to it.
No, I'm looking forward to playing it as well, but I actually so it just showed up on my dashboard. I was like, oh, I'll download that. And then I was like, actually, I'll play that. And I mean, I'm not going to play the whole game again, but right from the off, right from that opening shot with the burning buildings in the background and the I forgot how much I love the music in that game. it's such a special, special game, you know, and how important that game is to the industry, I don't think can be overstated. Mm-hmm. Especially to online gaming, obviously, in terms of online services.
Live Arcade.
Not an online game in the traditional sense. But I'm looking forward to Ready Player One. And again, I don't think there's any reason for us to think, you know, as per the previous examples I've outlined, that that it shouldn't be good. Because I think the interesting one is, you know, in terms of video game movies, mm-hmm. is in movies based on video games, I think the big one is going to be Assassin's Creed. Because
I think you could be right.
Everyone's, you know, I think people looked at Prince of Persia and thinking, well, this could be the one, and obviously it wasn't.
But you know what? I have a soft spot for that film, and I don't know why. Mm. I think it's the cast, because when you put Ben Kingsley and Alfred Molina, mm-hmm. I'm not a fan, really, of Jake Gyllenhaal or Gemma Arterton. Mm-hmm. But
I like her.
But yeah, okay, easy now. but you know, when you've got a great cast like that, mm-hmm. like Ben Kingsley. Can put in a fantastic classical acting, British acting performance.
Well, he can be from anywhere, that's the point.
Yeah, I suppose. But like, he also can be a camp high villain. And he was perfect in that film, I think. He gave him a really good baddie. And the story, I think, worked well. And it looked great. And the soundtrack was good. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I didn't really have that big an issue with it.
Just out of interest, when was the last time you saw that film?
Maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
Because I watched that in the cinema, and I remember watching the cinema and thinking, oh, that wasn't too bad. And I thought I had a soft spot for Prince of Persia. Uh-huh. And it was on TV 2 or 3 months ago, and I made it through about 30 minutes of it.
Really?
And I had that same thing. I was like, I really like the cast, and I really like Jake Gyllenhaal, and I think he was really good in the lead, and as you say, Ben Kingsley, Alfred Molina. I was like, this film is shit. really going back, and again, this is coming from someone who quite enjoyed it first time round. Maybe I was being quite forgiving, I was just in the zone, but watching it again, and it's often I find with movies, you watch it the second time when you really, you know, you're not kind of experiencing the movie as I often find I do at the cinema, where a film can almost wash over me. Mm-hmm. It's the second time when I watch it that it often, like, the glaring issues start to kind of come to the fore. And they came to the fore very goddamn quickly when I was watching that. So, I'm not as big a fan as I thought. But but even then, as you said, you would consider it a soft spot for that film. I think even somewhat...
I'm kind of an apologist.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and I think that's completely reasonable. Like, a lot of people are apologists for video game movies, but mm-hmm. when are we going to get that movie when we don't need to fucking apologize?
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned Assassin's Creed, and I think having Michael Fassbender commit, like, because I think it's his mm-hmm. production company as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's the director who directed him in Macbeth, which was obviously very visually striking. Yeah.
So there's hope for it, and he looks absolutely. Great in the costume.
Yep.
I don't know how ethnic he's going to be, though, because, I mean, Michael Fassbender is part Irish, part German.
Yeah, but, I mean, Jake Gyllenhaal wasn't exactly Persian, was he?
No.
I
worry about whitewashing, that's the thing.
It's always an issue, though, and, I mean, again, people, like, what are we going to do, just get Ben Kingsley in again because he looks like he's from everywhere? But, I mean, to be honest, at this point, I mean, maybe because I'm white, but I just want it to be a good film. Yeah. I just don't give a shit about any of that. And... the thing is, Assassin's Creed, my God, if they get that right, that could be... I mean, that's
a
got
super franchise
all over it.
Yeah.
Because I know you people can... have issues with the Animus stuff in the game.
I like
I
it.
Actually, I, well, especially, like, again, people shit on the first game. The one that probably... It's not the best game to go back to.
It's not the most fun to play, but the story is solid.
The one I enjoyed the most while playing it, funny enough, was probably the first one, just because I hadn't played anything like it before.
Yeah.
And before it got all convoluted, I was so into that story and into the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think kind of reestablishing that mystery on the big screen could be very interesting. And then on top of that, if that works, as we all know, it can go anywhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, where's the next movie going to be? Wherever the fuck you want it to be. Anytime, any place, that's the point of Assassin's Creed.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, don't want to put the cart ahead of the horse. Is that the right saying?
Yeah.
Thanks for making sure. I've been on a bit of a roll recently of getting sayings just slightly wrong. So
right,
I keep
okay.
kind of second-guessing myself. But, yeah, if they get this right, they must look at it and think, my God, this has got legs. You think of other franchises where you have a great movie and you're just like, well, that's the end of the story. There's no need to keep going.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed could absolutely and very organically just keep going and going and going.
Yeah.
But again, you've got to get it right first. But we'll see how that goes.
I mean, I would be interested... Like, sorry to kind of derail, but I want to stay kind of
right.
on topic. But I think television does a pretty good job of adapting video game themes. Recently, you know, I'm a big fan of Community. And
yep.
Community did an episode that was all 8-bit.
Yeah,
and
it
was absolutely fantastic and quite well critically received as well.
I think that lends it, like, again, it's becoming easier because of geek culture becoming more established
mm-hmm.
in everyday culture
mm-hmm.
that you can do these things. But again, it's much trickier to do a movie. And again, finding that balancing act between having kind of a certain reverence to the you know, the source material,
mm-hmm.
but then turning it essentially into a movie. And just nobody's quite done it. I mean, you know, again, you look at some of the other ones they're talking about adapting, and you're like, well, BioShock, it's got everything there for it to be a fantastic movie, but like anything else, it depends who's working on the script, who's
yeah.
acting in it, who's the director. But yeah, TV shows that... But again, with TV shows, as you said, with Community, they dip into it. There's no...
It's an episode. It's not...
Yeah. There's not a TV show based on a video game. Not a single one.
Not any good ones, anyway.
I can't think
There's
of a
one
single...
called Video Game High School.
Oh,
it's
okay.
not. It's not based on a specific.
But again,
video
that's
game.
What I mean. That's more video game culture thing.
Yeah.
But other than a few animated things, I mean, they're on about bringing Sonic because they're doing a Sonic movie, actually, aren't they?
Yeah.
Apparently,
the cartoon isn't that bad.
Sonic Boom. Well, the game was shit. Because again, I'm a classic Sonic apologist, and I think there's a lot to like about bits of a lot of the more recent games.
I like the first three and Adventure.
Oh, no, I really like Sonic Colors. I thought was good. Sonic Generations I thought was borderline very good.
Mm-hmm.
Even the Sonic Unleashed, like the non-werewolf sections were actually pretty good. So,
okay.
And even what was the last Sonic World? Sonic, it was kind of like Mario Galaxy. It had all the kind of 360 worlds and stuff, Sonic.
Okay.
Anyway, it was on the Wii U, and that was okay, but it, again, like so many Sonic games, once you get past the first level, you realize they haven't really bothered with level design. But Sonic Boom was a genuine piece of shit.
Yeah.
And, you know, say they have this live-action movie, and I was thinking about this a few days ago. I hope it's very much true of the games. Like, if you look at Deadpool... And I'm not saying they go the Deadpool route, but Sonic is supposed to have an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the idea of Sonic becoming like someone with an actual attitude and being a lot more self-aware.
Yeah.
And not going, as you say, I don't want him cursing or anything like that. But, you know, kids, they're going to play Sonic games no matter what. It's like the best Pixar, like the best Disney stuff. It's got stuff for kids and stuff for adults. And I think Sonic games need to be at that kind of level where there is stuff which kind of recognizes... As a character, you know, obviously you've got to get the game right,
mm-hmm.
that recognizes that, you know, there are a lot of people in their 30s, like myself, who want to love Sonic, but have just been burned by so many shit games. And I think, you know, he's got all the attributes to be a much more interesting character on screen than, say, like a Mario or something, who's, for lack of a better term, very two-dimensional. But yeah. But yeah, Sega, they keep throwing, you know, just making it as a kind of kids, like, you, like, some of the dialogue in those Sonic games, beyond the fact that the games aren't very good, it's just horrendous.
Gotta go fast.
Gotta go fast. Jesus Christ. But yeah, as so many conversations end, you know, on Sonic being depressing, I had numerous other things we were going to talk about, but we're over an hour already. So before we go, I was just going to ask the usual question, what you've been playing this week?
So I've been playing a bit more Fallout 4. I've kind of gone back to it. With the news that the DLC is coming, I wanted to make sure I was ready for it.
A load of DLC too.
Yeah, right? Stuart got me the... He got me the DLC, the season pass.
Season pass.
For my,
oh, so you got the cheaper
Christmas
version,
yeah. Yeah.
Because it's going to go up after a certain day.
Yeah, people have caused us to think about it, and it's like, well, look, if you have it already, you got it cheaper.
Just get it.
And you still have, I think, a couple of, like, I think it was the start of March, so you've still got a couple of days to get
it.
It's
so honest.
And
they're just like, well, we want to give you more content, but we're not going to raise the
price,
essentially, and we're giving
you
a window.
That's essentially what they've done. They've been like, right, okay, we thought we were only doing this much DLC, but we're actually going to do a bunch more, but of course that's going to cost more. So if you're an early adopter, you get a great deal now.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're a late adopter, you still get good value, it's just not as good as the early adopters. I don't see... Like, you're opting in. I don't see where the grief is. Plus, it just means that when they bring out their Game of the Year edition, it's going to have more stuff on it.
Yeah, I don't know why people have got their fucking panties in a twist about it. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I do not get it. But that's
Of all the shitty stuff that game developers do to their fans to get them to
spend
money.
This isn't one of those.
This isn't the shitty thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I know you're not a massive fan of Bethesda games, but
their
DLC is always good. Like,
I know it's got like a reputation for fantastic DLC.
There's
Horse Armor, that's off the chain, of course.
But you know, I think
never forget Bethesda. Never forget hashtag Horse Armor.
Even if you don't, you know, enjoy the particular storyline of what they're giving you or whatever, there's always hours of content in there.
I mean, it's
fair enough. You know, I say always good. It's potential that you won't enjoy it. But I bet you there are people who will, and they will feel that they're getting their money's worth. So
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they're not quite CD Projekt Red and The Witcher guys giving you 16-hour DLC packs. But
yeah,
I'm still
an-ring about that. Like, that Witcher game is still staring at me on the shelf, and I'm just like, God, am I going
to
play this?
What we could do is we could have a suicide pact, and I'll get back into Witcher 3 if you start it.
Well, you're playing Fallout 4 at the moment.
I am, yeah.
All right. How much longer do you think you're gonna stick with that?
Well, it's gonna be my going back to game.
Oh, okay. So you're ready to start something else.
Well, it's more like I have a few irons in the fire at the moment.
I'm still working
through XCOM. Witcher 3. I'm basically just waiting for a period where I can sit and play through, because I got the first DLC, so I do still have that to start. Okay. So I feel like I'm at a nice point now where I have a new adventure to go on when I'm ready.
Okay, well, I mean, I don't think I'm a million miles away from finish, because at the moment I'm still playing Rise of the Tomb Raider.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm enjoying it. I mean, I've already mentioned to you off mic, as it were, that I'm not into it quite as much as I was the initial reboot.
Yeah.
In so much that I don't find the world as cohesive as the last game. And maybe it's just because the last game came as something of a shock. Like, I was never into Tomb Raider. That game showed up. It was the balls.
Uh-huh.
But I think I'm relatively close to finishing it. So, I mean, I could start The Witcher. I could commit to starting The Witcher before next week's episode.
Wow, okay.
If you want to wait another week, I'm happy to do so. If you're kind of enjoying the Fallout at the moment.
No, I think I'm really looking forward to playing more of The Witcher. So I think it could just be the push I need.
Okay, well, that's the thing. I feel like I need a push.
And this could be
the excuse.
My memory is still really fresh for Witcher 3 because, I mean, I only played it back in June, but it's so memorable. Oh, you're going to love it so much. It's so good.
That's the thing. Next week, we can talk about how you're finding it, returning to it, and how I'm finding it just starting.
That sounds good.
There we go. That's something to look forward to next week. We'll have something of a Witcher discussion. And on top of that, I've got a whole list of the most anticipated movies of 2016 and the most anticipated video games of 2016. So we're going to cover both of those next week. So that's going to be, you know, all the fun like fucking ever.
That sounds good.
yeah, I mean, I'm still playing Rocket League. I'm playing some of those strange arcade archive games because I keep getting them for review. The hamster ones, like the old Nichibitsu Japan only 80s arcade games.
Okay,
they're quite interesting to go back to. I'm not sure if I'd actually pay the money for them, but as I'm getting them for review, it's actually quite fun to actually experience some of these. But I was gonna go on this whole other ramble then about what else I've been playing. But to be honest, you know, I'm just looking forward to playing The Witcher now. I've kind of got this in my head. It's like, all right, I've got an excuse. I'm gonna finish Tomb Raider hopefully this weekend, and then starting next week, I'm all about The Witcher.
My only concern for you and The Witcher is the issues that you have with Bethesda games. At least when you start playing The Witcher, it gives you this massive open expanse, but it focuses you well. In a way that Bethesda doesn't.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, and again, it's not the genre of game. I mean, you'd have to go back to quite an early episode of Brash Games, Brashcast for this. But I mean, my game of the year back in 2012, whatever it was actually Dragon's Dogma.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love that game, adore it. And it's because I didn't feel like the NPCs were quite so retarded. I thought the combat was really good in that game. Mm-hmm. And again, as you say, it kind of pointed me in a certain direction and gave me the freedom to
deviate. Know,
expand, deviate where I wanted to. Yeah. And hopefully the same, well, based on what you say, is true of The Witcher. I've heard the combat is pretty decent.
Oh, yeah.
And at least it's pointing me in a certain direction but gives me that freedom to go off. So, you know, there's every chance I'll actually thoroughly enjoy it. But We'll speak about that next week. I'm looking forward to playing it. You haven't seen Deadpool yet, have you?
No, like, I just don't have a chance to go to a cinema out here. It kind of sucks.
Well, in that case, we'll probably never. It's going to be incorporated into our most anticipated movies of 2016, even though it's a movie I've already seen in 2016.
Okay.
Don't worry, I'll make it work. I always do. But yeah, we're rambling well over the hour mark, so we'll call it a day there. But, you know, as always, thanks for listening, and you know, if we haven't given you enough reason to come back next week, I don't know what we can do. I don't know what we can do, you know. But either way, please, you know, do join us next week. And until then, have a good one.
Bye.
Bye.